You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 3rd of May 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com because we have with us today the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door and the Freemasonic victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you today?
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm not too bad, actually. I'm all right, yeah. I actually watched a couple of episodes of The Greatest Story. I haven't watched it for a while. Can I hardly believe I actually did that?
How far back is it that you actually made that documentary series then? How many years back is it?
Well, I think it got released in 2013, but we're making it, you know, for a couple of years before then, 3 years.
Wow, so that's six years old? Longer than that?
Well, it won't be far off now, will it?
Wow.
A lot of people watching that during that time.
Wow, and it's really stood the test of time, hasn't it? It's still...
it's sort of battering right at the beginning, didn't it, really? It went up against Hollywood, but yeah, for sure.
Well, you've still got people that are discovering it for the first time now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I knew that would happen. I knew that it'd be... they try and block it, they try and do things to it, subvert it and everything, but it's like once given into I compared it to a shark. You know, it's there, it's always going to be there, and where it's going to rise, we don't know.
Well, it's, you know, people see it, they're blown away by it, and then it opens up a whole new world to them.
Yeah. In fact, I looked at some of the comments underneath that clip I watched. And fascinating, really fascinating.
Well, that's just what I was going to bring up, is the comments, because then you get people asking questions in the comments. And this is why, I mean, sometimes we might end up going over content that we've talked about before, but it's because there are new people discovering this all the time, and they need people to answer their questions. And I guess it's, you know, it's not too bad that if we repeat ourselves sometimes, because we usually find a new angle to it to talk about. I hope we're not going to be repeating ourselves tonight. We've got the preview of episode 20 to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, and we've also got some questions and comments from the listeners that we're going to get into. We're not actually going to talk about the video, just the script for it. We'll be talking about the video, the actual video, next week. And the first comment that we've got was actually left today by Z Cuckslayer. And again, this is one that I know you've answered before, and you'll probably end up having to answer it again. He wants to know, what video software do you use, Dennis, when you're editing your videos?
Well, I'm using Premiere Pro Adobe, which is for a Mac. So it's doing good stead. I mean, I've had one or two problems lately, but that's because I've probably put too much stuff all at one point. I probably need to relieve some of the weight off the computer. But yeah, that's the one, Premiere Pro.
Well, that's the problem with these things a lot of the time, isn't it? Is if you're using it on a Mac, there might not be something equivalent on Windows. Is there anything on Windows that you could recommend to people?
I could, but I can't remember the name now. It's been that long ago. In fact, I actually did all them years ago, Greatest Story Never Told on Windows. Can't remember the life, what it was called.
Perhaps it will come back to you later on. Well, you've got this preview version of episode 20. Now, is it pretty much finished, or is this just a preview and you've got extra bits that need adding to it yet?
Well, I'd be very surprised if it's the finished one, because I don't think I've ever done one of these without changes. But this is really in the really rough early stage. You know, I was just throwing things together. You know, what to finish on, maybe what to start with, you know.
So this is a sort of a rough draft of it. I think it's a very interesting subject that you've picked. Going into the Jesuits, and you begin with a quote that's new to me, and the quote is, "I can see Himmler as our Ignatius of Loyola," And that was said by Adolf Hitler. Now, you say that came from the Secret History of the Jesuits. Is that a book about the Jesuits?
It's a book, but there's another source as well, which I couldn't write it down. But I think it's actually on the movie. I started with the Jesuits because during this series I did a 180 degree turn on them. I'd always been led to believe they were Jewish, and obviously I'd fallen for the propaganda. But when I got into them and really did research them, they really were the right wing of the Catholic Church, and they really were on the side of the fascists and National Socialists.
Yeah, because we've discussed them before, haven't we? We discussed them from the point of view as people were saying, it's not the Jews, it's the Jesuits. It's the Jesuits responsible. And we were saying things like, well, why isn't it illegal to criticise Jesuits then? Why aren't we told to feel sorry for millions of Jesuits that were gassed and all these sorts of things? And then we sort of progressed from that to discussing very recently, about the way that the Jesuits were the right-wing part of the church and how they were looked upon as the sort of template for the SS and looked up to by the National Socialists in certain ways, which was quite new to me. We've got here is a quote from Hitler saying that he sees Himmler as his Ignatius of Loyola. And that tells us, it tells us a few things. It tells us that Hitler did not think negatively of the Jesuits. He thought positively of them. He thought when he is complimenting Himmler, that he would compliment him by comparing him to the leader of the Jesuits. And that shows you that Himmler would not have been insulted by that.
That's right. I mean, when I was researching the SS, they actually had 3 days of mental training, similar to what the Jesuits used to do, and to get this mental toughness along with the physical attributes of being an SS soldier. So, you know, they certainly had a big influence on the SS, and obviously Himmler being the leader of the SS, it doesn't surprise me when I hear Adolf Hitler said something like this.
Well, at the start of E. Michael Jones' book on libido dominandi, he talks about the Jesuits and their ideas and how what the Illuminati did. I forget the founder of the Illuminati, his name, just for a minute here. You can probably remind me, Dennis. But he...
Weishaupt, weren't it? Yeah.
Weishaupt, that's it. Adam Weishaupt, yeah. He basically took the ideas of the Jesuits and turned them upside down to form the Illuminati. And whereas with the Jesuits, they would get people to confess their sins and then they would absolve them of them or prosecute them for them for their actions if they'd been against the church. And what the Illuminati did, they would get people to sort of talk about what they had done and then they would use that. They would make use of it. And that progressed until it became psychotherapy and Sigmund Freud basically telling people to tell their sexual problems and all the rest of it. And then he would say, well, it's not a sin. Go out and do all the more of it. And basically psychotherapy is now taken over from what the parish priest used to be. The parish priest would absolve people of their sins and the psychotherapist says, oh, it's not a sin. It's great. Go out and celebrate it. Nothing wrong with being homosexual. And so it's basically turning everything on its head. And that's what the Illuminati did. So these Jesuits must have been, you know, pretty good at first. But one thing that we have discussed before.
I found some information on Ignatius of Loyola. He was actually under the Spanish Inquisition at one point, 3 days. And after the 3 days, they let him go.
Well, I was just going to say, when we've discussed this before, we've pointed out that Ignatius of Loyola, he was a converso Jew. So he was racially a Jew, but he became a Christian and a very zealous Christian. I mean, a lot of these Jews, when they convert, they do become zealous. You know, you can think of Brother Nathaniel. I mean, we can think of lots of criticism for him.
Yeah.
But they are zealously against Judaism, and they try to promote Christianity as much as they do. And this Ignatius Loyola, he was a converso Jew, and apparently quite a few of them were. So I've tended to look at the Jesuits and think, oh well, they must have been subverting the church, but in actual fact they weren't. They were waking the church up to the fact that there were Jews that were pretending to be Christians, but that were still following the Talmud and that were subverting the church, and they wanted to get the Talmud banned. They were highlighting what was in the Talmud, saying that this shouldn't be allowed in Christian lands, this shouldn't be published. Mm-hmm. And it was because they were like Benjamin Friedman, as you say, that were exposing the Jewish crimes to the Gentiles, basically. Yeah. And they started this organization. Obviously, it didn't remain Jewish, but it was started by these converso Jews. So, you know, you can still learn new things, can't you? It's not like we know everything.
For sure.
Plenty of new stuff to find out.
You need an open mind because a lot of the trickery is going on, so to speak.
Well, the next bit that you say that the Jesuits, that's the Society of Jesus, you say the Jesuit movement was founded by Ignatius de Loyola, a Spanish soldier turned priest in August 1534. And as I say, we can add to that, he was originally a Jew and then he was a converso Christian. And it says, then you say they were originally formed to defend the traditional Roman Catholic Church from her enemies. Now, what most people know about is, well, they were formed to try and get Protestant countries back for the Catholic Church. That's the normal story that you hear. The Jesuits were formed and they would try to infiltrate into Protestant countries so that the Catholic Church could take them over again. And you don't mention that. You say there were five things, essentially, that they were formed to defend the Roman Catholic Church from. And that's heretics is the first one. Then Protestantism, then Freemasonry, then liberalism, then Talmudic Jews, which is very different from, you know, the story that we're told that, oh, they were spies and they would try to, like they would try to infiltrate Britain and take it over for the Pope again, because that's not what they were about. I mean, we could have a look at each one of these actually. I mean, we could look at heretics, And what were the sort of heretics that they were looking for? Converso Jews.
Well, and people like the Templars as well, who, you know, they had this certain Gnostic story they brought back as well. So people, you know, were obviously influenced by them as well.
Yeah, there were others as well, weren't there? I think there was the Albigensians and the Bulgars or something. Similar to that. There were quite a few of these heretic sects that were following Gnosticism. And where does Gnosticism come from? It was the Alexandrian Jews that came up with Gnosticism, trying to discredit Christianity and trying to subvert Christianity right at the beginning. These Alexandrian Jews were with Gnosticism, and that's where Masonry comes from. And that's where a lot of those heretical Christian sects in the 11th century and after that's where they came from. It was just following Gnosticism. And I think as well, when they went out there on the Crusades, they came across Arabs and Jews out there as well, and they came across Gnostic information while they were over there as well, which had never been in Europe before.
That's right, yeah. And obviously, if you're knight and you're coming back from the Middle East, and you're starting to say that it's the devil is the good guy and not Jesus, then you're going to have a problem for sure.
I think this is where the Baphomet originally came from as well, because the Templars were accused of worshipping a head, and the head was supposed to be called a Baphomet or something. Very similar wording to Baphomet. And apparently when they use a cipher with that it was a code, and what they were worshipping was Sophia, which is the goddess. So it was goddess worship as well that they were interested into. Feminism in
which religion. Jews are into as well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's all goddess worship is. It's just introducing feminism into religion and equality. Well, you know, God has no equal. He doesn't need a goddess. So that was the first one that they were tasked with fighting against. And I guess the Inquisition played into that as well, didn't it? Looking for these conversos. Yeah. And then you got Protestant.
Well, they have a job to do, you know. And to be honest, even they have been exaggerated.
Oh, much exaggerated. I mean, we're told that was a bad thing, but the Inquisition was a good thing. It was searching out the sort of people that if they'd been allowed to continue to fester, they would come up with ideas like Bolshevism and transsexuals and all the nonsense that we have now, all the cultural Marxism. That's exactly
spot on, because all this would have come a couple of hundred years before it actually did, if it weren't for the Jesuits and the Spanish Inquisition.
Well, the next one on the list you've got there is the Protestants. So, and I mean, I've always been brought up a Protestant, and Britain's a Protestant country following the Church of England. So what was the ways that did they go to any wars against the Protestants? I mean, what was the way that they tried to fight against Protestantism?
Well, there's two sets of Protestantism, really. I don't class the British movement the same as what was going on in Europe for the Reformation. Two separate things. Like E. Michael Jones says, in Britain, it was just a case of a plunder and robbery. And, Henry VIII wanted another wife. Pope didn't allow it, decided to be head of the church. But I think there's also an undercurrent of a cult in that Tudor era, which I touched on as well at some point. As far as Europe goes, though, Europe, I mean, again, in an earlier episode, we spoke about how Martin Luther was known to be influenced by the Jews early on, whether he knew it or not, and he was financed, whether he knew it or not. But then later, he became aware of the Jews, and not only aware of the Jews, aware of their secret book, the Talmud. And once he'd understood that, then he went to town on them. Most people today think that Martin Luther was always against the Jews, which wasn't the case, but he did certainly see the light at the latter end.
Yeah, I think there were genuine criticisms of the Catholic Church in Europe, and they had some genuine criticisms, but it's not like they had witch burnings over here in Britain. They didn't have indulgences. A lot of the excesses of the Catholic Church just weren't in Britain. And Henry VIII just seized on his chance to take all the properties that belonged to the church. So what you're saying there is that they were more concerned about this Jewish influence on Protestantism, which was a genuine fear, because it was the Jews that owned the publishing houses and the printing presses that were printing these false versions of the Bible, these false translations of the Bible. Yeah. And they were funding these Protestant groups to rise up against the Catholic Church. So it was this Jewish influence that they were really against, and hoped that they could solve things with the Protestants, talk them out.
Well, the Jews actually said, you know, we've got to thank our Protestant brethren for being sincere in the cause, even though they didn't know we were behind it. So,
because we also at that time, when you think about it, the Jews came back into England, didn't they? About, I think, 16th century, something like that. And they were asked back because the British people thought, well, if we can get the Jews back and we can show them a genuine Christian country, they'll see how wonderful it is and they will all become Christian. And they sort of started to idolize the Jews and saw them as the people of the Old Testament. And before then, they'd always seen them as Talmudists. Pharisees or Talmudists, and instead they started seeing them as Israelites
against Catholics.
Yeah, and this, the reason why they did this, I think, is because they'd been listening to these Jews with the translations. Mm-hmm. I think it's William Finger said these names so many times, Burgos of Lira, something like that. About the 12th and 13th century, these Jews came in and they started trying to mess around with the translations. And then you get not the King James version, but you get other versions that are coming out. And that's when the Catholic Church said, look, we've got to stop this. We've got to stop these translations because they're making false translations. And the Jews are funding it. So it wasn't that they didn't want people to read the Bible. It was that they didn't want people to read Jewish interpretations of the Bible.
The wrong Bible.
And, you know, I mean, if you keep it in Latin or you keep it in Greek, then you can't have any arguments because it's those original words. You can't change them. So really, it is better to learn Latin and Greek. And you had a lot of people at the time that knew how to read Latin, and that's how it was kept. And that was the reason for it, not because they were trying to keep the Bible from people. Well, the next
we touched on that as well, didn't we?
Yeah,
we talked about the Latin was altered.
Well, the next one that they were formed to fight against was Freemasonry. So you want to talk about their fight against Freemasonry a bit?
Well, I could talk to a 32nd degree Freemason and he will swear blind that they have no grudge against the Catholic Church. But it's pretty obvious when you research into it that one of the sole missions of Freemasonry was to bring down the Catholic Church. And there's been a war that's been going on for quite some time. And the Catholic Church knew about it for sure. Because that's why they brought out these papal bulls, which once over, if you became a Freemason and you were a Catholic, you were excommunicated and you only got a chance of being excommunicated if, for instance, you were dying. But other than that, that was it. You was no longer a Catholic. And so consequently, over the years, they've infiltrated again. And after World War II, you know, we saw what Vatican II came up with, which was more Christian Freemasons than ever.
Yeah, since the war, they've totally been taken over. And the Jesuits, apparently, are the foremost promoters of homosexuality within the church. So, I mean, that's how far they've
gone. The first pope.
Yeah.
He was the first most liberal ever.
I say, we can see it with the popes, can't we? And we can see it with the hierarchy, and we can also see it with. I mean, essentially, I guess they were the secret police of the church, maybe the intelligence agency of the church, like the CIA of the church. It originally started with good ideas and good intentions, and it'd been taken over. By the enemy. Well, the next one, you say that they were formed to fight against liberalism. And I guess, I mean, back then it would have been in the Enlightenment and the Enlightenment values that they were against, I would have thought.
That's right. Well, there was a movement in Europe around about that time, just after the Illuminati were formed. A lot of countries went more liberal. And that's one of the reasons, I believe, why the Jesuits were banned from Europe because of the beliefs. And I think too many people in powerful positions persuaded that Pope to actually ban the very people what were protecting the Catholic Church. That's my belief.
Well, I think it ties in with your next one where you say that they're also against Talmudic Jews, because with the Enlightenment and with the translation of the Bible into English, we ended up with the scholars all suddenly becoming fascinated by the Kabbalah, and they were fascinated by that and trying to find ways that they could apply the Kabbalah to Christian ideas. And the Kabbalah, it talks about the, you know, that there's no good and there's no evil, and we'll blend all the opposites together. And really, we still have these ideas today with equality and diversity. Mm-hmm. And it all goes back to the Kabbalah and these Enlightenment values that they had, and the worship of man, humanism, and man can make his own laws. And why should man have to obey God's laws from hundreds of years back? We're civilized men now. We can make our own rules and our own laws up. You know, all these sorts of ideas were just starting at that time. And if the Jesuits were formed to protect traditionalism and uphold traditionalism, then they would have been against that. And that was the beginnings of liberalism. That's what they were against. And I say, and then the next one on the list is Talmudic Jews. And obviously the Catholic Church's position was that these Jews should be living separately. They could be tolerated in Christian lands, but they had to live separately to the Christians. They had to have their own separate area. They couldn't take part in civil society. They couldn't employ Christians. They shouldn't be money lending. I mean, originally they shouldn't have even been money lending either. They had to wear clothing to identify mm-hmm. them as Jews so that people could tell that they were Jews and that their interests were going to be different to the interests of a Christian. They were going to be out to look after the Jews rather than look after the Gentiles. So they had all these laws that Adolf Hitler brought back in that we've talked about. And these were the laws of the church. So the Jesuits would have been wanting to uphold that. They yeah. would have not been happy to see the emancipation of the Jew with the French Revolution. They would have wanted to stop all of that. I mean, that would have been part of their
remit. Well, that was the cause of all our problems, I believe. Once that revolution, I think it was Bill Finker, who said that was the releasing of Abaddon from the actual depths of the earth. He felt that revolution was the start of that, of the Antichrist.
Yeah, the releasing of Satan from the pit. If you see the Jews as collectively as Satan, mm-hmm. and they are referred to collectively as Satan a few times in the Bible, then yeah. when they were emancipated, that could be, you know, that ties in with that prophecy in Revelation of Satan being chained for a thousand years and then being unchained.
That's right.
And let loose.
Of course, the Pope was killed as well then. He was taken captive and died in captivity. The Catholic Church was reeling, really, really reeling at that point.
So the church was taken up because it's been taken over at times before in the past, hasn't it? I mean, we've had bad
right.
popes. I think we've even had Jewish popes. We've had, I forget the names of them now, the De Medicis. Mm-hmm. Apparently some of them are Jews. And the church has always managed, the right-wing part of the church, the traditionalist part, has always managed to pull it back.
And put
it back on course. We're just living in a time at the moment when it's in the hands of the enemy.
Totally.
Next, you say they became the right-wing military arm of the church, and because of the various appointed liberal popes, eventually their only allegiance was to the church itself. So originally, were they loyal to the Pope, and then that changed to the church? Is that what you're saying there?
Yeah, well, that's what it has to change because of the liberal popes what were coming to power. I mean, they're never going to defend what the liberal Pope wants defending because they were right wing.
How did they fit in with the Teutonic Knights? Did they come after the Teutonic Knights? I think they did, didn't they?
There's a question. Yeah, there's a question. I think, was it 14th century Teutonic Knights?
Yeah.
You caught me on the up there. But yeah, I mean, they both had the same principle. Well, one was defending Europe for Christianity, which was the Teutonic Knights. And obviously the Jesuits were defending the Catholic Church, but put in a position at some point to actually defend Europe because that was the whole battleground.
Well, Europe wasn't entirely Christian until the Teutonic Knights went into the Baltics, and it must have been mm-hmm. a couple of hundred years after that that we started having the Protestant Rebellion and the Reformation, and that must have been when the Jesuits were formed. So they must have been after the Teutonic Knights. So they would have had mm-hmm. an influence from them, I would have thought. They would have built upon what they had before. So almost like, you know, a new form of the Teutonic Knights, but not...
And at that point in World War II, they actually, I think we mentioned this last week, they actually, Hitler and his allies actually got Europe back in a short space of time with victories which were taking weeks.
And that's exactly what the Jesuits were trying to do.
Exactly.
So that's what you're saying. Hitler fulfilled the objective mm-hmm. of the Jesuits as far as getting the Europe back for the church, getting Christendom back under the control of the church.
Yeah. And obviously put Christian leaders in charge. So all of a sudden the Rothschilds are reeling. They've got all the money taken from them and their palaces and everything in France and in Austria were stripped. Even got 21 million for that time was a massive, massive sum. For the release of, I think it was Louis Rothschild, trapped there in Austria, was put in prison for 15 months, I think.
You say, often coming into conflict with colonial powers, such was their success that the Protestant response was for the occultist John Dee to found the Rosicrucian Order, a secret branch of Freemasonry. So you think that was a direct response to these Jesuits? I mean, that makes sense.
Well, that's the claim on the Society of John Dee website.
Right, so that comes direct from the Society of John Dee. That was the source of these Rosicrucians.
That's right.
Because I think the Freemasons go back to sort of 14th, 15th century. I mean, a lot of these secret societies, I think they were modelled on the Jesuits, but obviously the opposite of them, because they were opposed to the church. It was sort of using the same techniques that the Jesuits had, but trying to fight against the church there. In 1773, anti-Jesuit forces succeeded in persuading Pope Clement XIV to ban the Jesuits from Europe due to a changing liberal political scene where they eventually found sanctuary in Russia. I'm amazed at that, because Russia is obviously Eastern Orthodox. They're not Roman Catholic, and yet they gave sanctuary to the Jesuits. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Catherine was in charge of Russia. And she was no friend of the Pope. In fact, she'd said some pretty nasty things about the Pope. And before the Jesuits could actually bring themselves to move to Russia, she had to make a few alterations or apologies for that statement, for them to feel that the conscience was clear to go and live in Russia, which they did. And she did.
I have to ask Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson about that, because that might make a good podcast. I mean, he knows all the history of the Russian church and with the Jesuits over there. That might be an interesting part of history that we don't know much about. I'll mention that to him. Then you continue. In 1773, anti-Jesuit forces succeeded. I've just done that bit. In 1846, they were reinstated, but the once powerful Roman Catholic Church had been further weakened in their absence. So they were away for, 80 years there? And how were they weakened when they came back? Were the Jesuits weakened as well as the church?
No. Well, no, it was the church what was weakened, obviously, because you haven't got a force like the Jesuits fighting for you. They've been missing, as you said, for over 80 years. Then those who persuaded that particular Pope to get rid of the Jesuits knew what they were doing. And obviously the church suffered once the Jesuits had come back.
And what was the reason?
The reason to come back, by the way, was from a story I read somewhere, was the fact that the Pope in charge at that time was actually struck down with an illness, which apparently only the Jesuits had the cure for. And when they agreed to bring the Jesuits back, he kind of recovered in 3 days now, whether that's a true story or not.
So they had knowledge of medicine. They had knowledge of medicine, and they said, well, we can cure you, but you have to allow us back.
Yeah, well, the question is, did they poison him in the first place?
Yeah.
Or get, you know,
but whatever happened, they were allowed back from 1846 on. And I would suggest that from that moment on, they were never really as powerful as they were before then. Would you agree with that?
Well, it's always an uphill struggle. Well, I mean, 80 years, they've been off the scene. So if your top infiltrators and fighters are off the scene for 80 years, it's a problem. It's got to be.
Because you don't hear so much about them since then. I mean, you don't hear so much about them now, but they were a very, very powerful force whenever anybody mentioned the church. Yeah. They knew about the Jesuits. And then you move forward in time and you say a last-ditch effort to turn the tide after World War II and the Spanish Revolution saw Jesuits fighting alongside fascists and National Socialists to take back Europe. And again, that's something that's new to me. I mean, we've talked about the church's influence on fascism and the way that they helped it, but we haven't really talked about the Jesuits directly being involved in it. So can you tell us a bit more about this?
Well, certainly down in the Balkans, there was fighting. Priests were armed down there. And in the Spanish Revolution, again, I think it just got to a point where the Catholic Church, you know, it was every man, you know, on board. And certainly that was needed because of the assault of communism added now to that list, what you just read out. I mean, you've got the Bolsheviks now on top of everything else. So it's every man to the pump.
So when you were saying that the Jesuits are fighting alongside them, you mean that the priests were fighting alongside them and the priests themselves were Jesuits? Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you've got to draw a distinction between people that are Jesuits and people that have been educated by them, I think. A lot of the time you see on the conspiracy theory websites, they'll say, oh, he's linked to the Jesuits. And then you find out, well, he went to a Jesuit school. And the Jesuit schools, they're the best schools. You get the best education there. The highest education there is you will find at a Jesuit school. But it doesn't mean that the person that was educated there was a Jesuit any more than someone that went to a Church of England school is a Church of England priest. It just means that that's the education that they had. You say
well, it's hard to actually. There's been so much propaganda about them. It's one of them. It's hard to research because of what's been said, and you don't know if it's true or not. But definitely their oath. Now, some people believe it to be the true oath. I read that oath, and I refused to believe that that was the oath that they took. I'm going to Andy with me, but it mentions about even tearing babies from women's wombs. To me, that was just another propaganda to blacken them. Because anybody reading that particular oath would think they were the biggest monsters on the earth.
Well, maybe they were saying, you know, this is the vow. This is my loyalty. Nothing is going to break it. I mean, we cannot project our own sensibilities onto people from 500 years ago. I mean, if you look at what it's some of the things it says in the Bible, it says, you know, kill every man, woman, child, every animal, kill everything. And that was the world that it was.
I mean,
it was
the world then, yeah.
It was a vicious world. So, you know, maybe it was a false oath. Maybe it wasn't. We'll have to look at that. Have to look at that some more. You say a clear indication of their defeat and infiltration is when we hear the first ever Jesuit Pope calling for a one world government. So Francis is a Jesuit.
The ex-bouncer is a Jesuit, yeah.
So he's an example of how far they have fallen. So it's not just the governments, it's the church, it's everything that's become corrupted, isn't it?
The thing is, Freemasonry has such a hold now in all walks of society, from, you know, the religious part to the music industry to the movie industry, you name it, any industry where you can really make top money, there comes a point where one has to bend the knee. The Jesuits, as far as after 1945, I'm pretty sure if they didn't bend the knee, they were wiped out, you know, because they were certainly infiltrated. And obviously the consequences is a Jesuit priest now, or a Pope, a Jesuit Pope, who some of his decisions or some of the remarks that he's made just make him out to be a total false Pope. But there's no way that anybody could defend him. Even E. Michael Jones, who was defending him for quite some time in the early days, threw in the towel and said he has to go. And he still hasn't gone, by the way. Because the last time that the scandal came out, that he knew what a bishop was doing but refused to say, which falls in line with Freemasonry, again, and the vow. And he's just been kept quiet. He hasn't made any more comments, and he's still there, and he will stay there till the powers that be want him removed.
Well, E. Michael Jones says that they are now the homosexual mafia. That the Jesuits are the homosexual mafia within the church. So somehow they became corrupted. Yeah. I think with the sexual revolution, and I guess with the placing or deliberate placing of homosexuals in there among the priests, and obviously in there among the Jesuits to influence them, and that's why this Jesuit Pope is you know he condones that. I mean, what was it they did the other day?
Yeah.
They had a meeting on child abuse. And then at the end of it, they decided that they were going to redefine the word child to mean somebody that was all the way up to the age of 16.
Doesn't that sound Jewish?
Yeah, so that instead of saying, well, this is a homosexual problem, this is a homosexual problem within the church, they could continue to say, oh, it's a pedophile problem within the church.
That's right, yeah.
Because they don't want to insult the homosexuals. Incredible.
Yeah, and plus, these days, if you say the word priest, probably the next thought of anybody is a paedophile because of that propaganda, even though they were homosexuals, really, but obviously homosexuality is legal these days, so it's not really a crime as such. But when you look at how they've done it and how they've disgraced the Catholic Church, then you get the result of Ireland voting for abortion because there's no more trust in the church.
Most of the abuse took place in seminaries, and seminaries are they're young adults, young men, mm-hmm. not children. I think 99% of this abuse is homosexual abuse with young men. It's not with children. Yet that's the way mm-hmm. that it's promoted, because they don't want to smear homosexuality. Well, your final piece about the Jesuits, you continue talking about the Pope, and you say that he will seek the final annihilation of both Christianity and nationalism in all countries, including those victorious in World War II. And that's quite insightful there, because of the way that the Pope is continually going on about getting rid of borders and allowing the refugees in. I mean, he's a big cheerleader for it, isn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got to remember there's 1 billion Catholics who have no idea what happened during World War II and the result of Vatican II. They're still taken in by the fact you can see when he went to the Philippines how they turned out in the hundreds of thousands. But I've actually got a post that I'll probably use in that part next week, where the Freemasons of the Philippines are welcoming. So, you know.
Well, there are priests in Poland and in Hungary that are saying this is not what the Catholic Church should be preaching, that this Pope is causing more deaths than he's preventing by encouraging these people to get in boats to come over to Europe.
Yeah.
And they are still calling him out. The countries that are still mainly white, countries like Poland and Hungary, countries that were within the Soviet Union, that are mm-hmm. now Catholic countries, they have called him out, but nobody else is. Anyway, we'll have to look into more about these Jesuits, as I say, and I'll ask.
I recommend that, because obviously I feel I've been led up the garden path with the propaganda, which is easily done because you're only hearing one version all the time.
Well, I'll ask Dr. Johnson whether he can do something on this, especially that 80 years that they were in Russia for. Find out mm-hmm. what his opinion is, because you move on to who funded Hitler.
Yeah, well, the old thing last week was about debunking the myths, and this more or less a continuation. I haven't thought of the title yet, but it is a kind of debunking of certain things, you know.
You say anti-communist industrialists at home and abroad, for example, the German Fritz Thyssen and the American Henry Ford. Now, they mm-hmm. were funding Hitler. And also, you say the traditional Roman Catholic Church were responsible for Hitler gaining power and funded mm-hmm. the escape of Axis troops from Europe after World War II. We've covered that. You say that they also gave safe haven in the Vatican for the last surviving Axis dictator, Croatian leader Anton Pavelic, before he escaped to Argentina. So we've mm-hmm. gone into that as well. So you've got the church funding them. You've got America funding them. And then you've got the pen name of an author or a group of authors who remained anonymous and who published a book about the funding of Hitler by American bankers between 1929 and 1933. And this book, you say, has largely been debunked by historians. However, in the Rakowski interview, the Red Symphony interview, Rakowski said that the banker Warburg had used an alias when giving donations to Hitler so that he would not realise that he was receiving donations from the Jews. We may never know for sure, but this revelation means it is possible that Hitler received donations from Jews, believing it to be money from Christian Germans, when it was instead from Jews who also hated communism. I mean, that's new. That's a new one. Where did you hear this Rakowski interview? Where's that from?
Well, we've covered this in one of the earlier episodes when he was not necessarily a Freemason, but he was arrested by Stalin in a purge, and to try and save his life, yes. he said to Stalin, like, you know, I can give you some information. And obviously, he did start to bleed some statements, and this is one of the statements that came out. And he actually said that Warburg was funding him, but he didn't want Hitler to realise that it was the Jews. And I was thinking of why would somebody do this? And speculating, when you look at today, the Jews, this has been going on for a long time, this is even before World War II, the Jews have always been split on this certain point. One lot want communism, and one lot particularly want more nationalism. This is the Trump Putin and the Obama Clinton split type of thing. So this possibly could be Jews who didn't want communism, just like there's some today who don't want communism.
Well, it makes sense, because you've got rich capitalists and you had rich Jews that owned lots and lots of industry, and the last thing they would have wanted was the industry to get smashed up and taken over by the workers. So the very, very rich Jews, the bankers, they would have wanted communism, because it effectively meant that everything was owned by the state and therefore it was owned by the banks. But the medium rich Jews, the ones that owned these factories, they wouldn't really have wanted communism. So they would have looked for people that were standing against it and tried to find a way to help them. Basically, I mean, they wouldn't have been looking for a return on their investment, but they would have been looking to help somebody that was going to stand up against communism, because it would have protected their investment. So it does make sense. I was just forgetting.
It's a new angle, like you said, though. I mean, you know, when I thought of it, you know, penny dropped. I'm not saying it's, but there must have been Jews at that time, and influential Jews who didn't want communism, just like they were in Britain.
Well, as you say, and we see the same thing today, don't we? We see American Jews that are funding and supporting people like Tommy Robinson. And then you've also got these Jews that support liberalism and transsexual rights and gay rights. And you've got a faction in civic nationalism that is allied with Israel and thinks Benjamin Netanyahu's wonderful. And then, you've got the more liberal, Marxist, left-wing type Jews that are involved in the Democrats in America. So, there's always been a sort of right and a left. That's why we say it's false, right and left. You just need to stand up for your ethnicity and do what's right by your people and not get distracted by right-wing and left-wing. Because there's good on the right and good on the left, which is National Socialism. It sort of blends the two together. Well, that's probably where we'll leave it for today on the video, and we'll get into some more of that next week. Maybe it will be released next week, maybe it won't. But we've got a couple of comments here that I think we should try and fit.
I've just thought of the software for Windows, what I used. Graham kindly came on and reminded me that some of it was used, believe it or not, on Windows, but I also used a bit on Sony. There's some software called Sony, which I used as well, which is a higher grade than what Windows were.
Okay, I think he's left a message in the chat room as well, and Zikuxa is in there, so hopefully he will have picked that up. Well, we've got a few. We've got a few comments here to get through, and I think we'll overlook that first one, and we'll get into this second one, because you were asked if you could do a response to a website, and the website, the person making the comment is James Thomas, and he's linked to a website called Father's Manifesto, which I've seen before, and it sort of loosely tries to promote a Christian identity message, but at the same time, it promotes an anti-Hitler message. and it calls Hitler an Austrian Jew. I mean, what did you make of this site? I've had a look at it as well, but what did you make of it?
Well, it was no different to what I heard before. You know, that they were saying that he was Jewish, and really, he was planning the demise of Christianity in Europe. It's something that's been said many times, and every time, you know, I've debunked it, because at the end of the day, you know, when you're building, trying to rebuild the Roman Empire, you're hardly going to be a Jew.
Well, this idea that Hitler was a Jew, that was put out by Jews, that was black propaganda. I mean, Carolyn Jaeger talked about this the other day, actually, that at the time there were people that were putting out anti-Hitler propaganda, and it was known that it was all rubbish. But 70 or 80 years later, people today, conspiracy theorists, they get hold of it and they write whole books on it. And claim that Hitler was really a Zionist Jew, and it was all a plot, and that seems to be the information that this guy is using, and he's got a load of Hitler quotes up there, and all these anti-Christian quotes, and you know that they just come from
most of
books,
them table talks,
yeah, table talks, and there's another one as well. I can't remember the name of it, but we've mentioned it before, and it's debunked in the book The Holy Reich, and it says this book was brought out after Hitler's death, and it's full of all this anti-Christian stuff that just totally contradicts everything Hitler ever said. Anything he said when he was alive that's recorded, it contradicts it. I mean, if you see something that contradicts what Hitler says, and it was produced years after he died,
correct,
then it's discredited, isn't it?
Totally. You know,
it can't be true.
And the reason why they do it is, like I've said all the way through this particular series, is that if people knew that it was a holy war and that Christianity had lost to the Jews, and now their agenda is to rid Christianity completely, the job of the Jews of doing that would be so much harder. And so the less people more people are ignorant to the fact it was a holy war, which they declared, the better for the Jews today, because they quietly go about either race mixing or down in the Middle East. There's a lot of Christians down there suffering under ISIS. So, you know, and eventually no hive laws and everything else are going to be pushed. And the Christian is suddenly going to wake up one day and find out that what World War II was all about.
Now that seems to be the main thing that they're hiding, because that's what they're concentrating on. I mean, especially this page, concentrating on the anti-Christian stuff. And then he says that Hitler saved all the Jews because he saved them from firebombing by transporting them away and putting them in camps and removing them out of Europe. But I mean, the reason for doing that is because he didn't want them in Germany, didn't want them in Europe, and he didn't want the war. The idea of removing the Jews, he had that long before the war started, and that had actually been put in process long before the war started, with the Havarah agreement, as we talked about before, with the Jews being transported off to Palestine, and all of that was done before the war started. So this idea of removing them was about 20 years old by the time of the war, and the Jewish question that had been on everyone's lips for quite some time. What are we going to do with these Jews? So it wasn't like he was doing it to save them from the firebombing. And then he claims that Hitler must have been working for the Jews because of his policies led to the loss of all these Europeans. Now, it wasn't Hitler that declared war. And he wasn't holding a gun to the Germans' heads saying, you know, you must keep fighting for me. They were prepared to lay down their lives for him because they knew he was prepared to lay down his life for them, as he did right at the very end. And this guy that's writing this, he says, never before have we lost so many Europeans. Well, he seems to have completely forgotten about abortion and miscegenation and immigration and everything that we've had since then. I mean, just think of the abortion holocaust. How many Europeans have we lost from that? What about the attacks on us that we've had since then, since we lost the war? No. I mean, all these different tools of weaponry that have been used against us, cultural weaponry, feminism and immigration, abortion,
yeah,
all of that.
All he
doesn't mention any of that. Then he brings up some Nuremberg documents. And of course, we know that at Nuremberg, the Germans weren't allowed to produce any defense documents of their own. They were only allowed to use the ones that were given to them by the Americans that had already been gone through to make sure that they couldn't be used for defense. And there were fake documents put in there as well. We know that the confessions that they signed were fake because they put German towns on them that didn't exist, prison camps that didn't exist, words that didn't even exist in German. All these sort of things were put in there. So we know that there were lots of documents that were fake. And these documents claim that Hitler was destroying the churches and breaking them up, and he was going after all the Christians. And that's all totally refuted in the book The Holy Reich, and we've discussed at length how Hitler was removing the communists from within the churches and doing what the Jesuits had been doing before in the past, removing these traitors so that the traditionalists could take over the church again. And that was why the church was allied with Hitler, is because he was doing that. It was not like he was trying to get rid of Christianity. That was, I think it was point 21 in the 25-point plan, wasn't it? I mean, that was a foundation, a foundational part of National Socialism, was to support positive Christianity. And then the thing is,
as long as he didn't interfere with the government, religion in Germany was probably the most freest on earth. You know, people could actually practice what they wanted, as long as it didn't interfere with the state. And so it went.
And you had a lot of Christians that joined the party. A lot of churchmen that joined the party, because they saw that National Socialism was aligned with Christianity. It was the same ideals of putting the nation's needs before the individual's needs. But then there's another accusation that we quite often see, and that is he says that Hitler was a homosexual, and that all the National Socialists were homosexual, and that sounds so ridiculous, because you know we know about this, we've looked into this, we know about what they said about homosexuals, how they studied them, how they said that if they get into any positions anywhere, they form a mafia, they bring in other homosexuals, which we can see happening in the British government. You know, there's far more than 1% homosexuals in the British government, far more than 1% homosexuals in the BBC. That's because when they do get in somewhere, they bring in other homosexuals. They give other jobs to other homosexuals. They work like a secret society in the same way that Freemasons would, only they're homosexuals. Well, so we know that they weren't homosexual, but this...
It's a red flag. It's a red flag, because you name another country in the world who didn't have laws against homosexuals, including Britain.
Well, every country.
But it's
every
not a Nazi. Did. It's not a Nazi thing. Exactly. So when they start going on about this and not mentioning anything about the rest of the world, it's a red flag to me. It always has been.
Well, the reason why there are these rumours is because this guy, Magnus Hirschfeld, that was running the Sex Institute, before Hitler was in power, he was running the Sex Institute, and he was the source of putting out all this black propaganda and smears, saying that all these members of the National Socialists, they were all really homosexuals. And because he had this influential position, because he was a part of this sex academy, homosexuals would get sent to him to cure them. Because he was looked up to, his nonsense about the National Socialists being homosexuals, it had some form of credibility. And when one of the Strassers went to Canada, he started repeating all this stuff. And also after the war, again, all this information is still there, and the conspiracy theorists get hold of it and they say, oh, look at all of this. They were all homosexual. And there's a book called The Pink Swastika that Henry Macker promotes. And it all goes back to this Magnus Hirschfeld, who was an enemy of National Socialism, who was smearing them.
Well, this is the guy in Babylon Before Hitler, that extra part would have put on the end of the I'll fill a bit of story. This is the guy who used to invent clothes for flashers, so they could walk down the street and, you know, easily flash a woman without having to remove any clothing. It's just, you know, gutter, really, isn't it? You know, that's all it is.
He was a total pervert. He was a total pervert. So anything that actually comes from him is discredited. And then finally on this page, and this is really bizarre, then we finally get a load of quotes that are genuine quotes from Adolf Hitler, and they're all praising Christianity. So it sort of disproves everything else that's on the page. So the guy that put that page up, I think he must be a bit confused. But yeah, I wouldn't pay any attention to it. And that's the site is called Father's Manifesto. So don't be deceived by the title. All right, Dennis, we've gone a few seconds over time here. Thank you very much for coming on today. Pleasure. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you all have a great bank holiday weekend ahead of you.
Tuned in to